All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Wednesday, May 11th of 2022. My name's Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim, and I hope that the postponement of the Guardians-White Sox game has not completely ruined your early slate like it has for me, or pretty close. I think I'm sitting on 65%. Vince Velasquez, which isn't looking so good here. I guess the one thing that is not so bad, I guess, or maybe can make you feel a little bit better about it, is that it affected everybody all the same. Some people are probably naturally faded that game. They're going to benefit a little bit more. Some people are probably very invested into that game, like I am. I think it all comes out in the wash eventually when these kinds of situations happen that nobody could have known was going to happen. I think the same thing in general about surprise golf withdrawals. I know sometimes you've got a guy that maybe, wasn't practicing that week or has been obviously dealing with an injury. That's one thing, but you get sometimes those completely surprise, withdrawals from golfers sometimes. And, I think that's one of those things where you're going to go crazy, playing DFS if you let that get to you too much. I'm mostly just hoping here that this is somewhat contained. I think the bigger concern would be a wider spread league outbreak, but hopefully we'll try to avoid that. So anyway, welcome everybody. If this is your first time watching or listening to this stream on the podcast version, this is an open Q&A style show. I answer questions from the SaberSim community that we get in through email, through YouTube chat, through Slack, live on stream. We talk about how to do certain things in SaberSim. We talk about broader DFS strategy, whatever you guys want to talk about. If you are watching the recording or listening to the recording of this, two things. There'll be a time-stamped list of everything I talk about on today's stream in the description. If you want to bounce around, that's the best way to do it. Second, there's a link to join the Slack community in the description of every video as well. Definitely recommend joining Slack if you haven't already. We have sim alerts letting you know when we run new sims for games because of breaking news. We have free bets that we post every single day that are up, I think, 60, at least the NBA ones, up 60 units since the start of the year. And we have the Office Hours channel, which is the best way to ask your questions to get answered on this show. Of course, if you're watching me live here, welcome. Happy Wednesday. And make sure to subscribe or follow the podcast so that you get notifications whenever we go live. But HC said, Jordan, I jinxed the slate. I tried to MME today. Well, it's your fault then. So scratch what I said. I'll send everybody complaining your way. I didn't realize that you would do that to all of us. So cool. Let's get the app pulled up. We've got a few questions in our queue here for today. We'll start things off here in just a moment with a question about player pool management. How specifically removing players from your pool? How to curate a player pool if you need to? Spoiler alert. Right. We'll talk about few contest selection. I think I had a contest selection question here in here. Stack ownership in baseball. If you have questions, go ahead and fire away into YouTube chat now. And let's get into it here. Before Brad yells at me, let me adjust the view. The default view, I realized why I was getting off track here the last couple days, sometimes not having the right screen. The default view, when I pull up a screen share, oh, it's not that one. It's this one? This one. So StreamYard clearly wants me to use that one, but I like this one, because it's easier to see. So anyway, let's go ahead and get into it. Had a question come in through support. This was from an email and a good one here. So let's answer this one first here. And the question says, how do I determine whom to remove from my player pool? And the short answer here is that I don't really think you need to worry about this that much. You don't need to worry about it in the same way you do for traditional optimizers, I guess is a better way of putting this, right? A traditional optimizer, other tools out there, is going to optimize every lineup based on the highest average projection possible, right? It's going to take all the projections, the average projections you have in your pool, and build you basically the best average projected lineups it can. And if you're building for GPPs, typically what you need to do there is you need to give it a bunch of rules. You need to tell it how to make constructions that are built for upside, like stacking, things like that. You'll need to give it typically some kind of way to think about ownership. You'll want to, you know, use some kind of ownership rules. But you also have to do some player pool curation, right? And the reason that you have to do some player pool curation on a traditional optimizer is because average projections alone aren't indicative of upside, right? In some sports, they might be more indicative of upside. In others, less so. But a traditional optimizer is basically just going to love all of the players that are projected very well, point per dollar at their average. And it's going to jam these guys into lineups because it is the most efficient way for the optimizer to solve the problem it's built to do. Right. And that means that you typically have to do some kind of player pool curation if you want to get good lineups or if you want to get better lineups using a traditional optimizer, because it doesn't know what upside is. You have to tell it, you know, only use 10% of this guy or don't give me any of this guy, because even though he's projected well on average, I know for some reason or another that he doesn't actually have upside based on your own research. Now, what SaberSim does that is different is that we use individual or buckets of individual game simulations that we have for these games when we build your lineups. So while we have the averages for each player in the pool, right, they are just a description of what the player's full range of outcomes looks like, right? And these buckets of different outcome ranges for Ohtani's pitching performance, for example, right, each of these has a set of actual game simulations, play-by-play game simulations of how the game could play out within them. And when we build your lineups, we take different sized buckets of these game simulations and build lineups to that sim that are optimal for that sim or set of sims, right? And what that means is that anytime you're getting a player in your lineups, that player must have upside, or they must have enough upside to show up in that lineup compared to what other players scored in that bucket of sims. They're not just there because they fit really well from a point per dollar standpoint. So at a very basic level, I think you need to do very little player pool curation or management in SaberSim overall, right? Because you are not going to get those guys just popping into your lineups that don't actually have the upside to take down a GPP. And let's build some lineups here and take a look and see what we're getting here. But let's take a look. And I'll show you what I'm talking about here in a little bit more detail. And of course, there is value that can be added by doing a little bit of player pool curation. Some of that's a sport-to-sport specific thing, so happy to dive in a little bit more detail into specific sports. There's other just strategies that I think that you can think about when you're thinking about a player pool that we'll talk about here a little bit too. But so you can see here, right? So we're kind of, you know, we're getting, are different exposures here, right? But any player popping up here, even if we've got those nine hole batters that are pretty good point per dollar plays popping up occasionally, right? There you can basically rest somewhat assured knowing that these lineups are built for upside, right? And yeah, we're getting the nine hole Nicky Lopez a little bit, but it's a part of a KC five stack. I'm fine with that, right? You know, a really good example of this too is NBA, especially during the regular season, where, you know, sometimes you might get those, you'll get those guys that are maybe min salary, 3K on DraftKings, and they're projected for like 17 and a half, 18 points, right? That makes them a 6X value. And maybe value's thin at other positions on the rest of the slate, and they're actually one of the better value plays on the slate. Well, a lot of times those guys grade out pretty well point per dollar on average, and traditional optimizers will love them because it enables them to get other players into the lineup. But since we're using SaberSim's simulations to build your NBA lineups in the case of NBA, a lot of times you'll see you actually won't get as much exposure to those guys as you might think, right? Because a lot of them don't have the raw scoring upside to get up to 30 points or whatever you need for that player to really pay off their like GPP winning salary there on the NBA side. So anyway, for starters, right, I don't feel like you need to do the same amount of work ahead of time on SaberSim with your player pool, because your lineups are going to be optimized for a set of simulations anyway. Now, is there a reason to curate your player pool outside of that period, right? Well, absolutely. I mean, I think a few very basic reasons why you might want to remove players from your pool above and beyond that is players that have a risk to not even play, right? Questionable players, players playing in weather games, right? I think there is one weather game on the slate tonight. I don't know if the weather report has changed, but we do have this Houston and Minnesota game. Looks like there's going to be some weather there. So maybe a game that you don't want to play, right? Because of weather concerns. Above and beyond that, I think you can justify maybe removing some players from your pool if you want to take a really strong stand on ownership, right? Maybe you're looking at the, maybe you're looking at the pitchers here for tonight's slate. And maybe you're seeing, or not even the pitchers, maybe you're just looking at the slate here tonight and you're seeing Cardinals look super chalky, right? And you just don't even want to play the Cardinals, right? Maybe you remove the Cardinals stack from your pool just purely, and maybe we'll add Michaelis back in, purely to fade the ownership there, right? Kind of an exploitative move there. I've talked about a little bit before as well on golf in particular that I will sometimes curate my player pool off the bottom. I will trim golfers away that don't have at least a 50% chance to make the cut in the Sims to try to just build lineups that have a better overall chance of getting six of six across the cut line, right? That actually is a very similar, that's basically a very similar thing to what the minimum projection filter does, right? On most sports, this will automatically remove players that have just a very, very low projection from your pool, just so they don't accidentally pop up because there was maybe a sim where they really did outperform their projection or something like that. So I think there are opportunities here to do that anyway, right? To make some adjustments to your player pool. But by and large, you probably don't need to have the same feeling of, I have to curate a player pool to get good lineups like you might on a traditional tool. The lineups you are going to get by default are going to be a lot better. The last note I'll make on this too, and I think I maybe kind of hinted at it here a second ago, but even if you want to make adjustments to your player pool, you probably don't necessarily feel like you need to do that on step one here on the home screen before the build, right? One thing that I like to do is, you know, if I have an angle I want to take on the slate, I'll run a build without making any adjustments to just kind of see how much I'm getting of different players, right? You know, let's go back to the example before. So in this case, we ran this build. We're only getting 5% Cardinals stacks anyway. So maybe a Cardinals fade works pretty good, right? I kind of like that idea. It looks like SaberSim kind of wants to do that anyway. But, you know, maybe I decided I wanted to fade Otani because he's chalky, right? Well, in this case, that's a guy we're getting 100% of in our 20 lineups. So maybe an opportunity to check ourselves and maybe really decide if we want to do that. Even if we did want to do that, even if we say, no, I want to make a really aggressive stand at pitcher tonight, you can still make that adjustment on step three without necessarily having to go back and do everything in step one, because of the way SaberSim builds you a big pool of 500 lineups and we'll sort through and find the best 20. So we can make adjustments to our exposures here dynamically on the fly, at the end of the process, instead of having to have everything up front. So, really good question there. Let me know if there are any other questions, any sports specific angles that you want me to dive into there as well. Again, I don't think it's not as if you never want to make any player pool adjustments, period. I'll do different things for different sports, different situations. But if you are used to, if you've come from a different tool and you're used to having to go in and basically build your pool, right? Even a lot of sites out there just offer player pools, right? They'll say like, this is the player pool, set your pool to this and then build, right? You really don't have to do that here. Good question there to get us started off. Let's go ahead and move along here and keep it going. And jump to a question from T-Pick. Interesting one here, actually. Relevant one for the SaberSim crew. And give me a shout out if I'm having microphone issues at all today. No, that was an issue here on Monday. No issues yesterday, which was good. But want to make sure that's put to rest. So if I have microphone issues today, somebody let me know. But from T-Pick, am I better off putting 5 lineups in 2 single entries and a 3 max, or putting 5 lineups in the 444 20 max, all less than $5 contests? Yeah, so we're actually, it's funny you ask this. We're doing a little bit of kind of behind the scenes contest analysis at the moment right now. Andy and I have been working with Eric on that, analyzing at least, it looks like 444, I assume you're talking about FanDuel. We've been analyzing the DraftKings lobby and actually doing some back testing of different contests as a way to kind of check some of our contest selection recommendations, make sure that we're putting you guys all in the best position to succeed with what we recommend on our contest. So should have some more content on that particular subject, I would say, coming out here in the next few weeks or so. For this question in particular, 5 lineups and 2 single entries and a 3 max, or 5 lineups in the 444, I'd probably go with the single entries and the 3 max. Part of the reason is, all other things being equal, I would probably prefer to max out the contests I'm playing. I don't max out every contest I'm playing, but in a situation where it's kind of a very simple like option between these two, I'd rather be, you know, even footing with the players that have the most equity in the contest, right? And by having the same number of lineups. I also think one thing that is kind of showing through in our contest selection research at the moment, and it correlates to what we've talked about here for a long time. Generally, those single entries and those three maxes are going to be a lot higher effective entrance, and they are going to play a lot softer. So I think you'll find that it takes a lot less to cash to top 1% and to bank the single entries and the three maxes than you'll find in that 20 max. So I'd probably stick to those five lineups, or the single entries and the three maxes in that particular case. So good question. Aaron said dime times are trash. I think it depends. I don't think they're great. So this is where it kind of gets interesting and into some of the research we've been doing. They don't grade out very well by effective entrance. And I think a lot of times when you look at those dime times, you get a lot of people, you know, the recreational players, the really soft kind of fishy players that end up creating a lot of dead money and pumping up the expected value in contests. They don't really play down there. Like that dime time contests are going to be basically unattractive to anybody that isn't just entering a ton of stuff, right? Because there's just not a lot of recreational money down there. And even if there was, it's too easy for a handful of sharp players to take up a lot of equity in that contest. Now, with that said, I think they are, being that they're under the $3 threshold on DraftKings, I still think the pool of players that are playing them is soft enough to turn a profit. I think they can be a decent way to, they would not be the first contest I would go play. I think almost always the quarter jukebox, under $3, the quarter jukebox, is going to be better. The $1, even in baseball, the $1, 20 max is probably going to be better. Most of the single entries and three maxes under $3 are all going to be better. I would say, you know, getting a way bigger jump in prize pool, but the $4, 20 max is probably a lot softer of a contest. But after you've played all of those, I think jamming into the dime times can be a decent way to just get a little bit additional action down in the low stakes, right? Like, if you're really super focused on them, you can get another maybe $20 down over the course of a day entering all of them, with the potential to turn that into, you know, if you were to take down one of those, you'll probably take down all of them, 10x. Your money on that, another $200 to whatever else you won in different contests there. So I don't know if I'd say they're trash. I don't know if I'd say they're unplayable, but they are not ever going to be the first contest I would recommend under $3. They would probably be second to last, only in front of the mini maxes, right? Like, I would probably jam into all of the dime times before I'd start playing the mini maxes, which I think are extremely sharp contests at the low stakes. But at some point, when you're trying to get as much action down under $3 as possible, it makes sense to incorporate them. So, but again, more information to come, some updated data-driven contest selection notes coming here in the next couple weeks. So look forward to that. Good question from In It to Bink It. And he said, is there a way to see ownership of each team stack? This is a really common question. It's come up a lot this season. It came up a lot last season. I'll bring this up to the team and see, maybe there's something we can do here. Because I do think having stack ownership is interesting. It's an interesting idea. I think there's obviously, you know, we could take that pretty far, in terms of how like robust we wanted to make that. But I think it would be pretty easy to do like a super basic version of stack ownership pretty easily. So I'll bring that up to the team. I will say, you know, there's a couple things I think. There's a variety of different ways to get pretty close to this, depending on how much time you have and depending on how specific you want to get. I will continue to say that, you know, for as long as pricing stays pretty soft, which I feel like on both DraftKings and FanDuel, pricing has been crazy soft so far this season. It is very easy to build good lineups under the salary cap, sometimes way under the salary cap. You can basically play whoever you want. While that is still the case, I do feel like, you know, just at least an ordinal ranking of stack popularity, you can just take the implied Vegas totals and reverse them, or not reverse them, show them in like top to bottom order. And I feel like this works pretty good as a stack ranking, right? If you just want to see, show me in order what the most popular stacks are going to be, I feel like this works pretty good, actually. And I've been pretty surprised at how consistent this is. Now, with that said, it doesn't take into account DFS salary. So there are limitations to that. And if you also want more raw numbers, I think you can If you want more raw numbers, you'll need to like do something else there, right? That's not going to tell you an actual percentage. So from there, kind of next steps. One other thing that I think works pretty good, again, and this is an increasing order of how deep you want to go here. Taking like just the top overall batter as a general rule of thumb, as like how likely that team is to be stacked, I've also found works pretty accurately, right? You know, this would say around 20% Cardinals, around 20% Mets, around 15% Texas, right? One step even further from there, if you pull down the player projection CSV, probably my favorite way to at least approximate this that I've experimented with here in the past is to just take the average of like the top five highest projected owned hitters on a team and use that as your stack ownership. That I have found actually approximates five stack ownership pretty well. I've experimented with that a bit. I've compared it to other sites' stack ownership as well. And I've been surprised for how simple and kind of rough that approach is, how well that actually works. Matt says, regarding stack ownership, could you just do an Excel pivot table on SaberSim ownership on batters? I am sure you could. I think I literally did something way similar where I just downloaded it and basically like just did an average of, I used the top five batters in the, by ownership to calculate it. You could probably get far more sophisticated about how you did this. Maybe even calculating, you know, specific, if you wanted to calculate how likely were individual players going to be, stacked together within a given team stack, I think you could take that another direction. Again, it's going to depend a little bit on how deep you want to go here and how much time you have to do it. I would say if you just want to gut check how chalky our team's going to be, looking at the implied Vegas totals and just looking at the individual batter projections, I think approximates it's just fine. I've found taking that one step further and averaging the top five batters from each team does actually a pretty good job of it. I think you could go a little bit deeper here, but I do think it's a good idea. I think it's something that we could use, and I'll mention to the rest of the team the idea of doing this. Because I do think at least a simple version of this would work pretty good. Last note on this before we move on, I would just keep in mind that, you know, this is going to get a little weird depending on the stakes you're playing at, and particularly the sharpness of the contest you're playing in, right? The sharper the contest you're playing, first of all, ownership is going to get a little bit more efficient, which I think in baseball will actually generally... I'm not sure. I was going to say in baseball, I think it means ownership will spread out a little bit, but now I'm not so sure about that. What I really wanted to say, though, is that, you know, you have to pick players in your lineups, right? Like, you have to pick players. You have to have a first baseman in your lineup. So it's very easy to project ownership for first baseman because you can have this nice, convenient assumption that ownership has to add up to 100%. In stacks, when you're calculating stack ownership, not everybody has to stack. And the more soft money that's in a contest, the less people are probably going to stack. So you have this other component of, you know, I think one thing you can do is just say, I'm of the pool of lineups that feature a stack, I want to calculate how likely that lineup is to have a stack of a certain team. And then you can add it up to 100%, and that can be nice and pretty, and that works out. But in reality, there's going to be lineups that don't stack at all, and it's hard to figure out exactly what percentage of the lineups in the field aren't going to stack. And, you know, I think it's a fair argument to say that there is less of a reason to try to exploit inefficient stack ownership, the less of the field that is stacking in the first place, right? If 75% of the field wasn't even building a stack, it would be so plus EV to just stack the highest total team, because so few of those lineups actually even do that, even if they're the most popular stack. That's not the case in like modern DFS, baseball DFS, right? There's a lot of stacking going on now. That assumption that everybody's stacking gets better and better, I think there's more and more of an argument to exploit stack ownership. But it is, I think it's worth noting here that you have to, I think you'll get a little bit more out of going this route in sharper contests, actually, where more people are stacking. Whereas in smaller dollar, softer contests, you're still just getting such an edge from stacking, period. So anyway, we'll move on from there. Let's see, jump on to the next question. I think I have a couple in YouTube chat here, but if you are watching and you've got a question for me, fire away now. Cause, not so many yet. Aaron, I'm a little confused here with your question. Let's talk NBA and giving X out players a projection. I assume that what you're talking about here is like giving players that have maybe a zero projection, a projection, taking a shot on like very low projected guys to see if they get in the game. I haven't experimented so much with that. I will say, I mentioned this earlier this season. If you're playing these two-game NBA slates, I do think it is a wise thing to lower or remove this player filter, right? So this player filter by default is set to 15 fantasy points. I think that's a pretty good rule of thumb for regular season main slates. But for two-game slates, you want these guys here. I feel pretty confident saying that you should have these guys in your pool and give the builder the opportunity to use them. Because again, going back to what we started the show at here, right? You're only going to get these guys showing up in your lineups at the rate at which they are optimal for their set of sims. So I do think you should include, 10.64 projected Peyton Pritchard, because if you get 5, 10, 15% of him in 20 lineups or whatever, that's probably a good thing, right? That's going to differentiate you from the field, and give you an opportunity to, to have a high scoring lineup, to have a really, differentiating piece in that lineup. In terms of adding projections to some of these guys down here, if you've got a read on it, I don't hate it. I think you would have to be, you would need a pretty good reason for it. Like there would have to be, because what we're saying is that like, there's a player that you've got some information could see court time, that the Sims don't. We consult quite a bit of sources for our minutes projections here and the way that we simulate these games. If you're giving a projection to one of these guys down here, it's going to be a huge edge if you're right. But you're kind of going against probably four or five different data sources that we use in terms of who's going to see the court. In a massive blowout, maybe you get there. But I don't know if that adds more value than not. Aaron said low projected. So like lower projected guys, I 100% think that you should, I would recommend just setting this to zero for your lineups. If you haven't, it's probably not been killing you. You don't get a ton of these guys anyway. Here, let's experiment with this and see how many we're getting. But I think it's a good idea. Let's see what we get here. See how much of these guys we're getting in just 20 lineups. So we get a little George Hill and then a little Wesley Matthews. Those are the only two in 20. Let's see in our 150, right? So Wesley Matthews, a little George Hill, a little Zaire Williams, a little Peyton Pritchard, right? We're getting like, I mean, you get actually a fair bit of George Hill and Wesley Matthews here. And this is where, maybe you could come back behind this and kind of temper some of this exposure so that you're not blowing up any of these lineups or getting too much of these guys. But would anybody be that surprised if Peyton Pritchard was in the winning lineup on a two-game slate? I wouldn't. Or Damian Lee, right? If the Warriors blow him out and Damian Lee gets, a little run in the end of the first half and the end of the fourth quarter or something like that, and at 3K puts up 18 points, right? Like that seems very reasonable to me. So I like the idea of doing this. And I've been including these guys in my pool just to have them in there. So I think it's a good idea. I will say, the last note, our ownership projections down at this range, I do think get a little wonky. Just because little subtle adjustments of ownership of projections in one direction or another here make a big difference. So I think all of the players down in this range will come in a little bit higher than we project their actual ownership to be. Right. Like, first of all, a good example, right? These two, like Tice and Javon Carter, are not literally going to be 0% owned, probably in a large field GPP. Most of these players are not going to be sub 1% owned. They are going to be probably a little bit higher than that, like one or two fantasy points. But that is a, or not one or two fantasy points, 2%, right? Like, let's say, for example, that George Hill is actually 2%, right? That's actually a 4x increase of what we projected his ownership to be. So really two notes on that. The first is if you're doing something in your process that uses the ownership projection as kind of an input or like a leverage calculation or something like that, be careful about these numbers, because when ownership projections get this low, it can do some weird things to that kind of calculation. And second, be cautious of the default ownership fade slider and your overall exposure to some of these plays. When ownership projections get that low and the ownership fade slider is very high, right? It also can really pump up your exposure to some of these guys. Like, typically I just like to take a few shots on these, have a few flyers, generally won't want to be much more than like 5% exposed to any of them, but I think they're good players to add in your pool. In fact, actually, you know, a lot of times the minimum projection filter itself is mostly just a hedge against the ownership fade slider, right? If we weren't ever using the ownership fade slider, and we were purely bucketing sims and building optimals for individual sims, right? You actually wouldn't need this, because a player with a very low projection would only show up in the lineups at the rate at which they were optimal in sims. It is because that ownership fade slider comes up that sometimes it can create a situation where a player is showing up that has a very low ownership projection in a lot more lineups than they are optimal for, right? And that's generally a good thing when ownership fade is working correctly. But sometimes in situations like exactly what I'm talking about here, you can get some weird results. So all of this to say, I love putting these players in your pool. I had a pretty good night on FanDuel last night on two different slates. On the main slate, with like a 1% owned Reed, right? Let's see. How low was his projection? This is still today. Yeah, so had a good lineup last night in the main slate with Paul Reed, who ended up in my pool because of removing this projection. And then actually in the showdown, the single game, also had, and on the showdown, you don't need to worry about it, it's set at zero by default, but I had a nice little Landry Shamet lineup that did really well as well. Two guys that were projected for under 15. So I do like including them in your lineups for these two gamers in particular. So any other questions for me here today? I think that gets us pretty well caught up. Don't see any other questions having come in here. Anything else for me? Waiting here for just a moment. I will remind everybody that's watching live here, or of course, everybody listening to the variety of different versions of the show here now. Free trial on our site, sabersim.com. If you stumbled along this and don't already have a SaberSim account, or if you tried us before and are interested in coming back, come check us out. Sabersim.com, free 7 days, no strings attached. We reset everybody's trial at the start of baseball. So if you've tried us last year, didn't like it or took a break or whatever, you can come back another free 7 days over the next week, whenever you choose to sign up. So definitely recommend checking that out. Dante said, "Hey, Jordan, I just wanted to say thanks for all your help. Turned $500 into $13K over the weekend." Whew, that's nice. That is a nice ROI. If I build for a 20 max, are you likely to put your top lineup in a small field single entry or rebuild? Good question. I find that it's just much easier to just have a build that I'm using for that slate. So if I'm playing 20 maxes and single entries and 3 maxes and things like that, I will typically just build generally a set of 20 lineups, and I'll use that for my 20 maxes. And I'll just, it doesn't even necessarily have to be the top lineup. I'll just put a lineup from my set into my 20 max, or into my single entry. Sorry. I don't think, you know, if you have the time to do it, because there is a difference in the optimal sliders for these different contests, right? Like, if we go and look at this. So let's say you're playing the $4, right? So your $4 20 max would be like these sliders. And then let's say you've also got that small field single entry in there, right? There's a difference in the sliders between what the builder would say is the optimal way to play these contests. And if you have time, I think maybe the best way to do this is to build separately four different contests. But I typically have enough going on other steps of my process. It's a lot for me to manage all of these different builds that I've found it easier to just basically just eat the fact that I might have a lineup that's slightly a little over leveraged based on ownership and variance for the single entry, but just throw one of my lineups in from my 20 max build into that contest. I don't think it makes a huge difference, to be completely honest. I would say, you know, I think it's perfectly fine to just fill from a lineup from your build. Another option is to, you know, just build a unique lineup for every contest you're playing. So if you're playing, you know, and you would only want to do this if all the contests have generally a pretty similar payout structure and prize pool and things like that. But if you're playing, you know, let's say you're playing two single entries, a 20 max and a 3 max, and you have 25 lineups total, you can build 25 lineups and just put a unique lineup into everything. So a couple different options there. But I would say the like perfectionist approach would be to do a build for every single different contest type you're playing. I think the best practice balance between having something take a lot of time and also getting the most value out of it is to just build one build and to fill everything from there. So let me know if that helps, but appreciate the kind words, Dante. And I'm glad you enjoyed the 2021 videos as well. So, but good question there. Anything else for me? Happy to stick around here as long as there are questions coming in. I'm curious how things are going in that early slate now. I'm pretty sure I'm like way, so I'm way under on Hauser and Talon, Jameson, I think it's Talon, and Berrios. So I have stacks of that's where the unfortunate component comes in. So I faded Hauser. I don't have a ton of reds though on the other side of that. I have like a ton of Blue Jays. I don't know what the latest is there in that game, but I've been back in these small slate and MLB showdown streets as of this week. I played a ton of them last year, and at the start of NBA season on this show I recommended people play some of those smaller slates as a way to spread out risk, and I had stopped at the start of baseball season, just a lot going on, getting ready for the start of the season, you know, getting familiar with you know, getting started on baseball season again. But as of this week, I'm back in those small slates and showdowns. So look out if you're in those contests with me. Dante said DK is giving credits out if you played someone from the White Sox game. That's awesome. Do you know, I would be curious, if maybe you know, maybe you don't, if that's automatic or if you have to email. I don't know. Did you guys get an email from DK about that? I don't think I did. Well, maybe I did. Yeah, I don't see one. I'd be curious. That's good to know. That might be something you have to email about, but maybe not. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. I'd be curious what FanDuel is doing too. FanDuel probably doesn't even know what happened. FanDuel probably doesn't even... Actually, you know what's funny about that? Before I even hopped on the stream here, the app didn't, like, there was no indication in the app that game was postponed. Like DraftKings says like PPD and it crosses the player out or whatever. I was looking at my Vince Velasquez FanDuel lineups for the early slate and it was like, projected starting pitcher, game starts in an hour. So anyway, no need to crack a cruel FanDuel jokes here. I should be grateful because I had a good night on FanDuel NBA last night. So anyway, I don't see any other questions coming in. I think we'll go ahead and cap things off here for today's stream right there. We will be right back here again tomorrow, same time, same place, 2 p.m. Eastern. So come join me again here tomorrow. Go check out the podcast version of this show as well, if you haven't already. I appreciate everybody that comes here and joins me live every single day. But if you watch the recorded version of this video in particular on YouTube, and you want something that's a little bit more flexible to listen to when you're driving around in the car or walking the dog or doing chores around the house or whatever, check out those podcast versions and let me know what you think of those. They're up, should be up pretty much everywhere, all podcast streaming services. We will probably do a official announcement of the podcast launch here in the next week to let people know that aren't aware that's out there now. But check it out. Let me know what you think. Anyway, good luck tonight. Go good luck in the rest of the early slate. I don't know if those games are done, but they got to be getting close. And I will see you all tomorrow. Take care.